A jagged flash of golden light across a silver sphere, the logo of Touchstone Pictures. Sunlight penetrates a barred window looking out over a misty mountain range, the logo of Mandeville Films. Touchstone Pictures presents a Mandeville Films production, a top shelf production.
Look at yourselves. Unplug from your chairs, get up and look in a mirror. What you see is how God made you. We're not meant to experience the world through a machine.
A Jonathan Mostow film, starring Bruce Willis, Surrogates. 14 years ago, a lab monkey is given a neural implant.
What you're telling me is that the monkey is operating this arm with nothing but his thoughts.
Absolutely.
Co-starring Radha Mitchell, Rosamund Pike, Boris Kodjoe.
There are 100 sensors, each listening to a different brain cell or neuron.
James Francis Ginty, Bing Rames.
Physically disabled people will be able to operate fully synthetic bodies. It provides a tremendous amount of hope for the future.
With James Cornwell as inventor Dr. Lionel Cantor, 11 years ago.
Because of the technology that we have, at a time of war, we're going to start seeing this more and more.
As manufacturing capacity expanded from military and industrial use, surrogates became affordable to the general public, causing a revolution in how we live.
The ability to leave your home without risk of disease or injury, to have perfect looks without trips to the gym or plastic surgery.
There's no question that at some point there will be persons like anyone else. They will not be human, but that they will be part of our community, there's no question in my mind.
The decision came down 5-4 that the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the use of surrogates in daily life.
Right now, we are witnessing an event that is of an evolutionary significance.
7 years ago.
According to VSI, the industry's leading manufacturer, over 98% of the world population uses a surrogate in all facets of their daily life.
A woman has a new face fitted before going to bed with her lover.
We're in the midst of profound changes where things that were once unimaginable have become inevitable.
Since the global embrace of surrogacy, crime rates have dropped to record lows.
We have witnessed an incredible reduction in violent crime, communicable disease, and discrimination. Problems that have plagued societies for centuries, solved almost overnight.
We are the creators. We will be making them
do everything for us, all in one machine.
3 years ago.
But there is a minority who actively oppose surrogates and are moving to limit their use.
Many people will see this as the invasion of the inhuman.
They've established reservations or surrogacy-free zones in major cities around the country.
A heavily built black man with long dreadlocks speaks to camera.
They are led by Zaire Powell, or as he is better known to his followers, the Prophet.
Those machines walking around out there, they're alive.
Directed by Jonathan Mostow.
You have been sold a lie.
Present day. A shiny yellow Bentley glides smoothly along a deserted neon-lit city street. A clean-cut young man in a tuxedo sits in the back seat.
You're going to love Tosca.
All right, but don't tell me how it ends.
The way they all end. Everyone dies. I'm so glad you could come back east for a visit.
Well, anything for a break from exams. We're almost there. Listen, thanks for lending him to me.
Have a wonderful time. I love you.
I love you too, Dad.
The young man switches off the intercom with a smooth smile. A biker in a black helmet revs up and races after the car.
You know, Armando, I'm not really in the mood for opera.
Fort Point?
You read my mind.
The youth addressing the smooth-featured chauffeur cracks a smile. As the vehicle turns in the road, the bike does the same. The Bentley turns into a seedy downtown Boston street and pulls up outside a club where there's a long line of people waiting to get in. The young man gets out. He hands the bouncer a wad of notes and is immediately let in by a doorman. The biker pulls up across the street from the club. Slowly he raises his visor, his dark eyes peering out with a hard stare. The young guy comes down the internal steps of the club, past a guy smooching two girls. As he wanders through the strobe-lit cavernous club, girls touch him as he passes them. The dance floor is a mass of good-looking, head-banging, gyrating clubbers. He climbs a narrow metal staircase until he's standing high above the teeming mass below. He closes his eyes, and like a diver on a high board, preparing to plunge, he spreads his arms and lets his body fall forward. Within a nanosecond, he's on his feet, dancing with a pouting blonde, both of them wildly shaking their heads. They lock eyes as they sway together. They burst through the back door of the club, locked in a hungry embrace. The girl wraps her long, bare thighs around him as he fondles her, both of them unaware that they're being watched. The blonde suddenly notices the helmeted biker.
Get lost, meatbag.
The young man turns back to the blonde. The back alley is engulfed in a streaming blue light. The biker surges out of the alley past the club entrance, narrowly missing an oncoming SUV, which skids, somersaults, and hurtles towards the people waiting in the queue, scattering them, and then crashing into a nearby wall. Blackout. A car drives towards the scene, the dark intersection lined with police vehicles and firefighters. The damaged SUVs being craned up the street. The driver lies sprawled on the ground, his torso separated from his legs, his innards a tangle of sparking green tubing. The car pulls up and a young female with long, straight blonde hair steps out.
I'm Agent Peters. This is Agent Greer, FBI.
Yeah, some jackass on a motorcycle wiped out a bunch of units.
So what do you need us for?
Well, I was going to file it as just a vandalism report, but it turns out this unit's unregistered.
Agent Tom Greer peers down at the young man, whose eyes have been burnt out.
Looks like he's going to need new optics.
No shit.
Smooth-skinned, sandy-haired Greer crouches down with a wry smile. He pushes the young man's head to one side, and from the back of the neck, carefully extracts a microchip from a slot.
Identity chip's completely fried.
What do you got on the girl?
Registered to a Cameron McAllister out of Worcester.
She file a report?
No, that's just it. No calls, no nothing.
Greer and Peters walk over to the scantily dressed girl lying on her back a few feet away. Greer pulls a lock of her platinum blonde hair from across her face. Her eyes are glassy and cracked.
Come on. Let's go talk to her operator.
The two agents drive across a cantilevered bridge towards the city centre. A doll-like-looking female in a grey trouser suit and a closely fitting grey cap bangs on a door.
Cam? Maybe nobody's home.
Stiffly, she leans towards the keyhole.
My Surrey's in for an upgrade. They gave me this crappy loaner. Could you? Certainly.
Peters takes the key from the puppet-like female. The two agents come into a spacious, modern apartment.
Cam? Cam's a good tenant, you know. Pays the rent on time, never leaves the apartment.
Blue-eyed, slim Agent Peters comes upstairs to what looks like a theatrical dressing room, full of clothing rails and wigs of every size and length.
Cam?
Greer approaches a blue-lit cubicle, the size of a fridge. He runs to the next door room.
Don't touch anything, please.
A thick-set bald man in a singlet, blood seeping from one eye, is lying on a reclining chair, wired up to a computer screen. Greer and Peters look concerned.
I'll call it. You sure this is Cameron McAllister?
Yes.
Agent Greer turns the computer screen to face him.
This is Agent Peters. We tracked down the blonde's operator. Yeah. Send a coroner.
Greer presses a button, and the last few moments of the young man's existence play back, ending with the message, connection failure.
You ever seen anything like this?
Greer's impassive expression answers her question. Later, on the subway, a black-skinned male with curly blonde hair sits next to a white-faced female punk, their faces blank. two clean-cut males and a female nod in unison with each movement of the train. Greer, sitting in the compartment, checks his watch. An aerial view of a cluster of high-rise buildings. Greer strolls down a dimly lit, long, narrow corridor and stops outside his door. He comes into a spacious, open-plan apartment. He pours himself a glass of bottled water in his pristine kitchen. He steps into a room and puts the glass down next to a prone figure bathed in a red light, a balding man with a moustache and beard, looking a lot like Greer, but older, wearing a metal headpiece with metal pads covering his eyes. Sandy-haired Greer steps away from the figure and slides open a door of a wall-to-ceiling built-in wardrobe. Having removed his jacket, he sits on a throne-like seat in a blue-lit cubicle. A vertical arm descends and clamps itself to his head. Two horizontal safety bars slide out and click into place in front of him. The bearded man, wearing a dressing gown and pajamas, removes the headpiece and pads, and as the back of the chair on which he was lying rises to a vertical position, he sits up. He rubs his bald pate, turning to look at his lifeless, smooth-skinned, sandy-haired surrogate, sitting in its charger cubicle. He comes out of the room onto a hallway and looks about him with a faintly dazed expression. Lightly, he pushes open a door into a child's bedroom, an army of fluffy animal toys huddled in one corner of the empty single bed. More toys and books are on the other side of the small room. With a misty-eyed expression, he gazes at a baseball mitt and ball, touching it gently and running his fingers over the name Robbie on the side of the mitt. He glances across to a framed photograph of himself with his pretty blonde wife and their young blonde son, all of them smiling into the camera. He closes the door and pads down the hall towards another door. He goes to knock, and then stops himself. The door opens, and his pretty, ringleted wife, Maggie, appears.
Morning. Oh, where's your...
In the charger.
She smiles coolly and hurries off down the hall, leaving him with a pensive expression. He follows her into the kitchen where she's putting on some coffee.
You pull another all-nighter?
Yes, I did. Think about taking a break.
A break?
Mm-hmm. Got some vacation time saved up.
How about Hawaii? Bridget said you got an amazing deal.
Why, it would be great.
She had this totally buff Surrey in Maui. She took it surfing, parasailing, deep sea diving. You know that rental place on Boylston?
I was thinking about us. You and me going away someplace together.
And leave our units at home? Are you kidding?
We could take a drive out to the Cape. We haven't done that.
Can we talk about this another time? You know, I should get to work. The shop's been really busy. Everyone wants me to look for summer. And...
Yeah, I was just thinking that, it just feels like we haven't really spent much time together lately.
We're together every day.
Sorry, it's not the same.
She comes up close.
It's better.
Her clear blue eyes flicker coolly across his face, and she goes. The bright green lawns of a university campus. A caption reads, West San Diego College.
Yo, Cantor! He's been in there all weekend. He's gonna miss the psych final.
Two students come into a room and find their fellow student dead.
Jesus. Somebody call the cops!
FBI boss Andrew Stone.
We are confronted with an unprecedented situation. Two people have died while connected to their STEM chairs. According to the pathologist, their brains were liquefied in their skulls. Whatever happened to their surrogates killed them.
Sir, how is it even possible?
We don't know. I'm imposing a total media blackout. No one from this office is going to be responsible for setting off a nationwide panic. The The public cannot be allowed to get the idea that using a surrogate can be fatal.
On a monitor, Greer and Peters play back the scene at the club with pouting Kim.
Tuxedo Boy's last moments.
Get lost, meatbag.
The screen whites out.
Looks like we got ourselves a witness.
Mm-hmm.
They zoom in on the biker. They see him reaching into a pocket of his parka jacket. Peters peers in closely.
What is that?
Exactly.
Greer zooms in on the biker's hand.
Some kind of weapon.
Anything yet?
Hang on to yourself. I think we may actually have a homicide here. Come here, look at this.
Are you serious?
No, we don't know that for sure.
Yeah, but what if it is a homicide? When was the last one? This could be huge. Yeah, Lee, go.
Got you next to kin. I hope you're sitting down. Kid's father is Lionel Cantor, as in the inventor of surrogates, Lionel Cantor.
The three agents look stunned.
Jared Cantor, son of Dr. Lionel Cantor, was found dead in his Southern California dormitory this morning. Cause of death remains unknown. A college sophomore, Jared was the only son of the man known around the world as the father of surrogacy. The former chairman of VSI shaped it into one of the largest corporations in the world. However, a split between Cantor and his VSI partners over the direction of the company led to Cantor's firing 7 years ago. Publicly humiliated and forced out of the company he helped to build, Cantor has since remained absent from the public eye.
At a huge red brick mansion.
Dr. Cantor is expecting you.
He actually lives here?
I didn't say that. You'll be speaking with one of his surrogates.
A clean-cut, besuited man comes out to meet them.
I work for Dr. Cantor. It's private elevators this way.
Armando leads the way to an elevator, and Greer notices him slip something into the inside pocket of his jacket. The lift door opens, and he leads the way into a spacious oak-paneled apartment.
Please, wait in here.
Nice place.
Should be. It's a piece of every surrogate they sell.
The ceiling is stuccoed, the floor polished wood, the furniture antique and ornate. A 30-year-old Dr. Cantor appears at the far end.
Dr. Cantor?
That's right. You're with the FBI.
Yes, we are.
This way.
I can't help but notice the similarities between your surrogate and the one your son Jared is using.
I never really knew Jared as a child. He grew up with his mother in California, who kept him from me. When he went to college, I encouraged him to borrow my surrogates whenever he wanted.
How did you manage to do that? A surrey has to be coded to your neural signature.
I'm not exactly your average VSI consumer.
He shines a light on his own and Jared's surrogate.
This was just a way for me to spend time with my son.
It's a felony to inhabit a surrogate registered to another operator.
No offense, Dr. Cantor. We're just trying to straighten out our facts.
What is this? Some kind of good cop, bad cop routine?
No, sir.
You trying to handle me?
No, sir.
Because I'm not going to be handled.
Dr. Cantor, I know how you must feel.
Do you?
Yes, sir. I lost a son myself.
Both Peters and Cantor look surprised, their hostility abating.
Do you have any idea why someone might want to harm Jared?
Cantor looks at the photograph on his desk of his smiling college boy son.
No.
Or yourself?
Greer nods gravely.
Oh my God. If it was me they were after, I'm responsible for my son's death.
Cantor is suddenly lifeless. Greer and Peters exchange a glance and switch off their recording devices.
Well, I guess the interview's over.
On a monitor in another room, the word paused flickers across the same fresh-faced image of Jared. The camera pulls back to reveal old Dr. Cantor, unshaven and balding, weeping bitterly. Inside the VSI tower block.
Robotic surrogates combine the durability of machines with the grace and beauty of the human form to make your life safer and better. Whether your budget allows for simplified generic or get ready to live your life without any risk or danger. You can live your life without limitations and become anyone you want to be from the comfort and safety of your own home.
VSI, where it all began. Do what you want. Be what you want.
In an office.
Agent Spear and Peters, I'm Victor Welch, VP Corporate Relations. Please sit.
Thanks for taking the time to see us.
No problem. You must know Andy Stone.
Our immediate superior.
Do give him my regards.
We're from the legal department.
Hope you don't mind if we sit in.
Not at all.
The two of you might be interested in a free software upgrade we're offering all law enforcement officials. Better night vision for your synthians, improved pursuit capability.
Any idea how a surrogate's head would explode from the inside?
Welch and the two smartly dressed females bridal.
Mr. Welch isn't qualified to answer that question.
What do the operators say?
Not much. They're dead.
If you're trying to imply a link between VSI products and an operator's accidental death...
I'm not implying anything. I just want to know how an operator can be killed by signals from a surrogate.
The idea itself is absurd. If it were possible, it would defeat the entire purpose of surrogacy.
Surries have jumped from bridges, been shot, even blown to bits without the least bit of harm to their operators. The fail-safes always kick in.
I can assure you, VSI's products have the most stringent safety standards in the industry.
What about a human head? What would cause one of them to blow up?
Agent Greer, we're not doctors.
Honey, I don't know what you are. I mean, for all I know, you could be some big fat dude sitting in a stim chair with his dick hanging out.
The woman's lip trembles. Greer gets to his feet. Peters shuts her mouth, suppressing a smile. She and Greer get into the lift, and she shoots him an amused sideways glance.
Interesting technique.
I hate lawyers.
Greer presses the button for the second floor, the engineering department.
What are you doing?
They step out into a workshop full of human body parts wired up to computer monitors. Greer approaches a handsome, 7-foot, ebony-skinned man in a white coat with an ID card attached to his pocket.
Steinberg? Seth Steinberg?
The ID shows a balding white man with bulging eyes. The Surrey blinks.
Hello. Sorry. I was in the can.
This is Agent Peters. I'm Agent Greer with the FBI.
Really?
Steinberg studies an enlarged image of the burnt-out chip.
An identity chip this damaged? Every circuit must have fired off at once. Kablooey.
Have you ever seen anything like this before?
Last week, a truckload of G.I. Joes did come back for reconditioning. And a couple of the Surreys were missing optics.
Mind if we take a look at them?
He leads the way through to another chamber, a vast factory floor of robots sitting on both sides of an endless workbench, and behind them on both sides, a conveyor belt of doll-like human figures.
Here we go.
Steinberg removes a plastic hood from the face of one surrogate unit and unzips its bodysuit, revealing a torso burnt to a crisp. Peters touches the robotic face.
No bullet holes? No blast damage?
No scratches? No dirt? No mud?
Mind if I check out the identity chip?
Can't.
Why not?
Didn't come back with one.
Greer's unlined boyish face looks somber. In a war zone, soldiers armed with rifles scurry across a sandy terrain trying to avoid the missiles exploding around them. One Surrey soldier is hit in the back. A message flashes across a screen. Surrogate disabled.
I'm down.
Damn things aren't free, Pulaski. Take the snipers from behind this time.
Yes, sir.
A crew-cutted colonel is handed a clipboard.
Back online.
Operative Pulaski puts his headpiece back on and lies down on his stem chair. Inside a troop carrier, his Surrey G.I. Joe comes back to life. Heavy doors open and the Surrey dashes back into the fray. The colonel hands the clipboard to an aide and nods to Peters and Greer.
Follow me. Keep an eye on Bravo Company.
It will kick some ass, sir.
Agent Greer, you're wasting your time with these questions.
Why on earth would the Defense Department want to develop a weapon that could wipe out our own troops?
So no such weapon exists.
If it did, I'd know about it.
And the soldier that we saw?
We routinely remove motherboards and optics for analysis.
If you'll excuse me, we're in the middle of a peacekeeping operation.
Brendan steps out of a robot man jeep and watches the two agents being driven off through the vast operations hall. At FBI HQ.
Check your screen.
What?
Miles Strickland.
Who?
Miles Strickland, meatbag. I did a run on criminal records for Motokuzi drivers and Black Arai helmets, and guess what I found? He's already in the system. He was arrested a month ago for multiple counts of armed robbery. And what's really weird about this, after he was busted, they let him off. Someone on the inside's protecting him, but I put out an APB anyway.
In a chamber full of multiple closed-circuit screens, robots with red light sensors attached to their skulls are scanning each bank of screens. One robot zooms in on a youth with wavy brown hair astride a motorbike. The screen flashes up. Visual match. Greer and Peters come to a heavy steel door. A beam of light from the entry keypad scans Greer's face. They enter another huge complex.
Recognition search caught your Dreddy.
Where?
Dorchester, corner of Park and Adams. Not far from the reservation. Boston PD is on its way.
Stay here and keep tabs on him.
Wait a minute, where are you going?
Dorchester.
That wasn't too difficult. I put his face in the system and bingo, we found him in an alley. K-33 over there brought it to my attention. Thanks, Jerry.
K-33 nods its head.
He's one of our best watchers. He's semi-retired. So he gets to work out of his beach house in Maine. It's pretty sweet, huh?
Yeah, it's a nice setup you have here.
Yeah, we can access every survey on the grid here. Touch of a button, I can tap into anyone's feed. It's kind of like being inside God's head. Oh, boy. I felt that one coming. Bobby Saunders, by the way.
Fat, sweaty Bobby holds out his hand.
Jennifer Peters.
Yeah. Yeah, you are, aren't you?
Can I ask you a question?
Hmm.
Why no surrogate?
Me? Oh. They've been trying to puppet me for years. But they ain't built a machine that can handle this big puppy yet. Excuse me a second.
He slides across to a monitor.
We have an assault and battery in progress. I need warrants to shut them down immediately. Charlie 4, 6-3, Niner, Sierra 7-8-5-5. Let's see if they have security camera in the hotel. Excellent, there is one.
Warrant for disconnect flashes up onto a screen.
Warrant received. Agent Peters, watch this. Boom. Boom.
The attackers freeze like statues.
Since when have you been able to cut off operators?
It's brand new software. I call it buffering. Lets me disconnect anyone from their surrogate.
Well, that can't be legal.
It's a gray area. They don't ask, we don't tell. It's pretty cool, huh? Aw, come on. Relax, we're the good guys.
He chomps into a sandwich. In Dorchester, helmeted Strickland on his bike is being pursued by two cars. A helicopter flies over the Boston Dockland area.
Latest hit on the bike, heading east on Southampton, half a mile from the res. Greer, be careful. You're heading straight toward Dread territory. We don't have jurisdiction to fly over there.
It's restricted airspace.
Greer, are you there?
The good-looking pilot takes his cue from Greer, who makes no attempt to heed Peter's warning. The helicopter flies in closer to a cluster of high-rise buildings. On the ground, Strickland is keeping ahead of the two squad cars as he races along the city streets, weaving between cars and then riding the pavement. The helicopter appears in the sky above them. Greer, sitting at the open side of the chopper, reaches down for a submachine gun. Below, a car trying to avoid Strickland is smashed side-on by a car coming from another direction. Strickland deftly weaves out of the way and heads off through a rundown area, with the police cars right behind him. Another police car tries to corner him by coming at him from another direction. He slips between them, plunging down the steps of a back alley, piled with rubbish bags. He rolls off the bike. Above him, the squad cars arrive at the mouth of the alley. Strickland tears off his helmet and starts to run. As officers swarm to the top of the alley steps, Strickland pulls out a weapon. It zaps off waves of electricity aimed at the officers' eyes. As they drop like flies, the helicopter hovers above the alley. Strickland points the weapon at the chopper. Greer falls to the floor of the chopper. On his stem chair, grizzled, bearded Greer tears off his headpiece and rubs his skull in agony. Electrocuted, the pilot flops forward on the steering column of the chopper, which starts to sway wildly. Tom Greer lies on his stem chair, his eyes shut as if having a nightmare. The helicopter spins out of control. Below, Strickland, carrying the zapping device in a canvas bag over his shoulder, races towards a derelict factory building, pushing past a queue of people. On the stem chair, Greer reaches for his headpiece and puts it on. Smooth-faced, sandy-haired Greer opens his eyes as the helicopter is about to crash. He sits up in his seat as the chopper clips the edge of the roof and plunges down on top of a rubbish dump, setting fire to everything in its way, bumping and rolling along the ground. It throws him clear, but people inside the building dive for safety as fires break out. Greer sits up and looks about him blankly. As he tries to get up, he sees that his arm has been torn from its socket, watery green liquid spurting out from its jagged, smouldering remains. His wrinkle-free, Botox-smooth face shows no emotion as he surveys the destruction around him. A few feet away from him, he spots his submachine gun. He draws himself up and grabs it with his one good arm. Strickland, at the door of the derelict factory, clocks him and dashes inside. All around, dreads are desperately trying to put out the fires. Through the flames, Greer spots Strickland, who sees him and sprints off. The dreads spot Greer. Strickland collides with someone, vaults over a low partition, and runs on. One-armed Greer picks up his speed, jumps onto the bonnet of a car, and leaps to the ground, as if supercharged. Dreads grab crowbars and hammers, and one fat woman cocks a shotgun. Three dreads man a truck, the others follow on foot. Greer closes in on Strickland, who runs down a passage. He jumps down to a lower level, and Greer sees him disappearing behind some corrugated sheeting. Strickland dives into a corner and pulls the zapping device from his shoulder bag, but it's run out of power. Greer's surrogate vaults onto the top of a corrugated roof, and then pulls himself up onto a higher roof. Below him, Strickland, hearing the footfalls, shoves the device back into his bag and runs off. Greer spots him and takes a running jump from one roof. Down to a low, narrow wall, and onto another roof. Strickland runs out past a pile of rubble, and glancing up at the sky, sees Greer leaping overhead like a human grasshopper. From one flat roof to another. Strickland jumps on some rubble and twists his foot. Above him, Greer jumps onto a rafter which collapses under him. He lands in a heap on the ground below. Seeing his chance, Strickland limps off. But Greer recovers and dashes after him. As he goes to grab him, the dread pickup truck plows into him. Greer slides off the bonnet, seemingly unaware of the angry crowd swarming towards him. He follows Strickland onto a piece of open ground. Strickland stops, exhausted.
I ain't done nothing. I ain't done nothing.
Give me the bag. Throw it over here. Throw it over here, now.
Strickland does as he's told. Greer picks it up and tries to open it with his one good arm. He falls on his back in a cloud of dust. Strickland gapes at the fat woman as she lowers her rifle. As other dreads run up, he grabs his bag and limps off. The fat woman looks down at the fizzing green circuitry of the surrogate's chest cavity.
You're an abomination.
Oh, God.
The real Greer, bleeding from his nose, whips off his headpiece. He pulls open the door of his surrogate room, and with blood streaming down his face, he staggers out into the hall. He tries to steady himself, but collapses, clutching his head. Lying on his back, he bangs on a door. Agent Peters is handed a note.
Lionel Cantor is on the phone. He's called for Greer a half dozen times.
I can't deal with this right now.
He's pretty upset.
Just tell him someone will call him back.
Peters?
Stone.
You gotta believe me. I tried to stop
him. You didn't try hard enough. You're done for the day. Clock out.
Perfectly groomed without a hair out of place, Agent Jennifer Peters steps into a charger unit, and the restraining bars close in front of her. In a dimly lit room next to an unfinished painting of an alpine scene, a woman sits up on her stem chair and takes off her headpiece. She looks similar to Peters, but is mousy-haired and shabbily dressed. Stiffly she gets to her feet, a haunted expression on her gaunt face. At Greer's apartment, Maggie comes through the front door with a friend.
Oh, you're kidding. Turquoise? I wouldn't carry a purse that color, much less a whole new scent. Oh, holy milk.
Oh, my God. Maggie finds Greer on the floor.
Tom?
She rolls him over and sees his battered face.
Oh my God. Bridge, call an ambulance.
An obese man lumbers across a kitchen and looks inside the cooker. Another man rifles through some drawers. Strickland, lying on a mattress, wakes up to find the dreadlocked prophet standing over him with his arms raised as if in prayer.
Miles Strickland, is it?
Why are you...
The two heavies take a sudden interest in Strickland, whose face turns white.
What's going on?
Who was it? Who gave you the weapon and paid you to use it?
I don't know.
Miles, you can't lie to me.
I'm not lying. I swear to God, sir, I'm not lying. He never told me his name. We talked on disposable cell phones. I never saw his face. I couldn't tell you who he was if my life depended on it.
He grins feverishly. The TV news.
A police chase through Dorchester concluded with an FBI helicopter crash landing inside Boston's Dread Reservation.
Residents of the reservation are outraged over what they are calling a gross violation of their territorial sovereignty. Human Coalition leader, The Prophet, responded to the incident in a statement made earlier today.
They've attacked us, declared war on our way of life, and left us with one option, revolution. We did not throw the first stone, but we will throw the last.
Tom Greer wakes in a private hospital room with a TV at the end of his bed. Porcelain-skinned Maggie is sitting nearby.
Hi.
Hey.
How's the headache?
Still there. Thanks for being here.
Imagine of course.
A world where children are always safe. A world where every child and every parent is secure. Make every childhood a happy one. Surrogates for Kids. Exclusively from VSI. Where it all begins.
Maggie turns the TV off.
Knock, knock. Hey.
Andy, hi. Oh, hey, my gosh. We haven't seen you forever.
I know.
Well, I should let you guys talk. Will you be okay?
Mm-hmm. I'll be fine.
I'll see you tomorrow morning. Bye.
Andrew Stone sits down at Greer's bedside.
How bad?
The doctor said you're lucky to be alive. Good thing you unplugged.
You gotta go get him. Strickland's got that weapon. You just get a court order and
there won't be any court orders. You've been suspended.
For what?
Tom, you violated our treaty with the Dreads. This whole thing is a...
Forget the treaty. You killed five cops.
Look, I'm gonna take care of this case myself, personally, all right? Now, I'm afraid the Bureau won't be able to supply you with a new surrogate until after the official inquiry. Same goes for your gun and your badge. Don't think about this now.
Stone pats him reassuringly on the leg and gets up to leave.
You killed five cops, Andy.
The tall, light-skinned black man looks at him steadily.
Take some time to heal.
Greer sits up and unclips his ID tape. Dressed in a sports jacket over a blue shirt and beige trousers, he comes out of the hospital. Agent Peter Surrogate appears around a corner. Spotting Greer's egg-shaped bald pate, she tilts her head quizzically. She strides towards him.
Hey.
Hey.
Sorry I'm late.
That's okay.
Wow. You look a lot like your sin.
Yeah.
Should we go?
He walks like someone who's been let out of prison after a long stretch. Nervous, unsure, letting people bump into him.
How long has it been since you've been out without a surrey?
I can't even remember.
Hard-faced, good-looking females stride past him, making him flinch.
I can't believe they didn't give you something for the anxiety.
More hard young faces stream past. Car passes him.
Greer, look, this isn't gonna work.
I'm fine.
I have an idea.
Peters leads him into a gadget store that sells off-the-peg surrogates. Blank-faced, staring mannequin dolls of both sexes, their bodies the ideal shape, and all in their early 20s, are on display. waiting to be activated.
Come on, this is a really bad idea.
Oh, it's gonna be all right. I'm sure we'll find you something decent.
Greer, wearing a headpiece, lies down on a stem chair. A tall blonde man in a dark suit, programmed by a store assistant, comes up through a hatch.
Now we're gonna have you back on your feet in a sec. Sync looks good. It's responding well to the signal, right?
Feels numb.
It's only a base model. It comes with vision and hearing. You want other senses? They're extra. Of course, if you like seeing your own face when you look in the mirror, no problem. You can scan your head, cast the thermoplastic, and you're good to go in less than an hour. Hey, and no charge on the improvements. I'm sure you wouldn't mind taking yourself back 5, 10 years, huh? What do you think of that?
I think we're done here.
Greer tears off the headpiece, and the surrogate loses power. Greer gets up from the chair and hurries away, leaving a baffled-looking shop assistant.
Mom! Come on, you can't come out here by yourself. It's not safe. Come on.
I'm fine.
Let me take you home.
I'm not going home.
Tom, you gotta forget the case. Because Stone is gonna run things his way, and as far as we're concerned, it's over.
It's not over until we get that weapon back.
You gotta let me help you.
I'm not gonna let you win. Take care of yourself, Peters.
Daubed on a hoarding, the message, humans only. On a bridge at the entrance to the Dread Reservation, a guard searches people before letting them in. Greer steps up to him and lets himself be frisked. Another sign reads, no machines allowed. The guard nods to him to go through. But as Greer walks off, the tall, bearded guard gives him a long, suspicious look. A tall, jagged steel girder fashioned at the top into a cross bears a hand-daubed slogan, Die, Robot Pig. As Greer comes alongside it, he sees that a man is hanging from it, like Christ on the cross. It's his sandy-haired, one-armed surrogate.
Death came for Miles Strickland, as death comes to all men. But for Miles, it's not an ending. It's a new beginning. When you sacrifice your own personal desires for a greater cause, a greater good, you never die. You never disappear. That is what it means to be human. There is no alternative. You can try to escape by living through a puppet, through a machine. But deep down inside, you know you're living a lie. Here, inside these walls, we understand the truth.
Greer stops to watch some boys catching balls in a baseball mitt. A ball rolls towards him, and he picks it up.
We sacrifice many modern pleasures and conveniences to feel truly connected. Not with machines.
He throws the ball to one of the boys.
But with ourselves. This is the human condition. This is what gives life meaning. My friends, soon the day will come when surrogacy must end. That day, I promise you, is close at hand. The day we get a second chance.
He watches as one of the Prophet's goons who was searching Strickland's room picks up a long stave, dips it into a vat of paraffin, and then sets a bonfire alight. Flames start to lap around the body of Miles Strickland, who lies motionless on a makeshift bier. Within seconds, he's engulfed. The deed done, the Prophet and his henchmen walk off. Greer walks up behind the big guy, Bud.
Excuse me.
Excuse me, Paul. Can I help you?
Yeah. I'd like to speak to the Prophet for a minute.
You and everybody else, but no.
What are you, some kind of cop or something? You got no jurisdiction here.
Can I talk to you about Miles Strickland, please?
The other goon fells Greer with one blow.
Enough.
The Prophet strolls up to Greer as he staggers to his feet, wincing.
It's different when you actually feel the pain, isn't it?
What happened to Strickland?
Was he a friend of yours?
He had a weapon. Very dangerous weapon. My people will do anything
to get this back.
Well, if I happen to come across such a weapon, I promise to have it delivered to your door. Show him to the gates.
The goons go to grab Greer.
Gently.
They let him walk by himself, blood trickling down his face. The Prophet watches him with a long, mistrustful stare and turns away. Inside his camper van, equipped with a homemade satellite dish, he kneels down on the floor of the vehicle, flips back a section of carpet, and opens a hatch. He pulls out a small aluminium case. Containing the weapon. In a deserted back street of Boston, a vintage Bentley pulls up by the curb, a few feet away from Greer. Greer turns to see who it is.
Agent Greer, may I offer you a ride?
A smartly dressed young teenage boy is sitting in the back.
You'll have to excuse my appearance. It's not safe for me to use my usual surrogates.
Not again.
This is one of VSI's newer models.
How long have you been following me?
Long enough to know you're getting nowhere solving my son's murder. You lost a child, Agent Greer. How?
Car accident. It's just an accident.
I'm sorry. I can think of no worse tragedy than a parent outliving a child.
All I can tell you is that the man who killed your son is dead. His name was Miles Strickland. He lived on the res. He was killed by his own people.
And that's it? Case solved? One man didn't act on his own. Whatever killed my son was an extraordinarily sophisticated technology, far beyond the capability of the Dreads. We're talking about a $1 billion weapons project. Who do you know spends money like that?
Greer's eyes flicker uneasily. The silver and black Bentley turns into a smart uptown street, and Greer gets out.
Focus on the weapon, where it came from.
A cut above his eye and one on his lip, Greer swallows uncomfortably. A smooth Romeo type places his hand over a sensor, then with his other hand holds a glass tube containing a sparkly blue substance under his chin. The tube sends a charge of electricity through him.
Do me.
He places the tube under a girl's calf.
That was intense.
A boyish male holds it to his neck. The first guy grins at Maggie, who's putting on an earring.
Hey, Maggie.
No, thank you.
Come on, I'll take the edge off.
Greer comes through the front door. Everyone turns to look. He gives Maggie a cold, knowing stare and goes off to the kitchen.
Tom? Honey? I thought you were still in the hospital.
Yeah. Can't see that.
What happened to you? Tom, I don't want you going out without your surrogate ever again. Tom.
That's very nice. Sexy.
Okay, don't start. I'm sorry. Those guys, they're friends of Bridges. She brought him over. She wanted to go to this party. I didn't even want to go.
How long have you been jacking?
I don't do it, Tom. And what does it matter if I did? Why are you being like this?
Okay, go have a good time.
He shuts the door in her face. Blonde Bridget gives herself a dose of electricity. Greer, wearing a leather jacket over jeans, comes out into the hall and strolls towards the spacious sitting room. He finds Maggie deep in conversation with the smooth Romeo. She looks up, just as Greer brings a chair down on top of Romeo, sending him sprawling onto the floor with a tipsy smile on his face. Greer crouches down and whacks him with his fist. The Romeo pulls a comical face and sticks out his tongue. Greer goes on until the Romeo's head is reduced to a blackened, gaping skull. Maggie's guests go on giggling as Greer staggers off past her. She takes a deep breath and hurries after him.
Tom? Tom, what was that?
What
do you want from me?
I want you. My wife.
I am your wife, and you won't see it.
He touches her flawless skin.
This thing, I just want you. And I want the woman that's in that room, my wife.
Things have changed, Tom.
You know, you've changed. You're just scared. You're just scared. We could go talk to somebody. Maggie.
Maggie goes back to her guests. Greer walks away, clutching his head in his hands, tears brimming in his eyes. Maggie, her shiny blonde hair swept up in ringlets, and her slender figure shown to full advantage in her strappy pink and black dress, comes into a dimly lit room, her eyes wide and unblinking. She peers with detached curiosity at the woman lying on the stem chair, sobbing. The woman pulls off the headpiece, her face wet with tears. She glances up at her beautiful surrogate, now standing still like a statue. The real Maggie's face contorts as she goes on weeping. Greer steps out of a lift, head bowed. A security guard addresses him.
Agent Greer? Is that you?
Yeah.
You look terrible.
Thanks. You too.
At his desk, Greer types in VSI Weapons Army. Information flashes up. Pentagon awards weapons contract to VSI, followed by Army cancels VSI contract. In a glass-fronted two-story duplex in the middle of a wood, the real Agent Peters is asleep in bed. A brown-haired male crouches outside her bedroom door. With his gloved hand, he turns Jennifer Peters' monitor towards him and replays the start of the investigation.
Identity chip's completely fried.
What do you got on the girl?
Come on, let's go talk to her op.
We can access every Surrey on the grid.
Touch of a button, I can tap into anyone's feet.
The intruder switches off the monitor, comes to the door of Agent Peters' bedroom, and aims a gun at her sleeping back. His expression impassive, he goes next door and switches the monitor back on.
Transfer to remote operator.
Agent Peters' pretty blonde surrogate is activated. Her eyes open, and she steps out of her charger cubicle, which stands in a line of identical cubicles. In his office, Colonel Brendan is studying a photograph of the weapon.
I wish I could help.
This thing killed 5 cops. One of my men. It almost put me in the ground. Now, I know it's a weapon. I want to know what kind.
You're asking me to compromise highly classified information.
I know what it is.
Where is it?
Right.
The colonel clasps his hands in front of him and takes a deep breath.
It's called an OD. Overload device. The idea was to end the battle with one shot. You beam a software virus straight to the CPU, disables the Surreys instantly. We didn't know the virus would defeat the built-in fail-safes. Kill the operators.
Who makes it?
The SI. After the test, the project was scrapped. Every unit was destroyed.
Except for this one, right?
Where is it?
Right now, it's in the hands of the Human Coalition.
How long have they had it?
A day? Maybe two?
This is out of your hands. Military will handle this.
The Prophet's two henchmen stride up to the camper van, which is guarded by two other men. The Prophet appears at the door with the case.
You called for us?
Take this to the federal building downtown. A woman will meet you there. Agent Jennifer Peters. You're to give it to her and her alone.
Agent Peters opens a filing cabinet and starts searching through the files. Andrew Stone spots her.
Peters,
what are you doing?
Just a background check on VSI. Structural stuff.
Those are internal financial records. Talk to Jenkins in corporate. Sixth floor.
As he walks off, she looks furtive. In her salon, Mag is attending to a client.
Don't forget the cheekbones. Okay, honey, face off.
With rubber-gloved hands, Maggie peels off the young Surrey's face to reveal a staring robot skull beneath. Bridget, injecting another Surrey's nose, glances at the door.
Mags.
Maggie looks round to see Greer coming towards her.
Hiya, Tom.
Bridget makes herself scarce.
Those smile muscles need to set. Hi.
Sorry about last night.
I'm at work, Tom.
But I didn't come here to argue.
Good.
See, I feel like I'm going crazy. I love you. I love the smart, beautiful, intelligent, funny woman, and I can't sleep. When I do, I have these dreams that are... that I can't stop thinking about them.
Don't.
Don't you ever think about them.
Of course I think about them, Tom. You say you don't sleep. You say you have nightmares. Well, that girl who you say is funny and charming and witty and has a great smile, she doesn't smile anymore.
I don't believe that.
The only reason I can get up in the morning and get out of the house is because this is who I am now.
That's okay,
no.
Maggie.
No, no.
Maggie?
No.
Maggie, wait.
Maggie's luminous face, with her perfectly arched eyebrows and her soft rosebud lips, suddenly stills. Greer lowers his eyes in defeat and slowly turns to leave the salon. On her stem chair, the real, careworn Maggie, who looks a lot like her beautiful surrogate, has removed her headpiece. She turns unhappily towards the cluster of pillboxes on her bedside table. She reaches for one and swallows a pill. Heavily armored helicopters fly in formation above the city streets towards the Dread Reservation. As they touch down, military personnel jump out.
Brothers and sisters, gather close and prepare yourselves. The day of the resurrection is upon us. Today we make history. Today we launch the revolution.
The Prophet's henchmen bang on the door of his voice booth and he follows them out. Brendan shows his team a photo of the OD.
You all know what we're looking for. Remember, do not fire unless absolutely necessary.
Biologicals too. Over here.
The assault team swarm across the reservation. The Prophet's goons emerge from a disused school. The Prophet is hit. The obese goon Ben puts his hands behind his neck in surrender as the soldiers swarm towards him. Brendan runs up the school steps and gapes at the green electronic circuitry fizzing in the Prophet's chest cavity.
My God.
The colonel's look of consternation is replicated on a bank of monitor screens. The camera pulls back to reveal Dr. Cantor Sr., unshaven, unkempt, staring morosely at the screens. He pushes two of the monitors away from him. In the deserted plaza where they agreed to meet, the agent Peter Surrogate walks towards Greer, who's sitting on a bench.
I couldn't figure out why the cops let Strickland off, so I started going through the payroll records. You won't believe this. For the past 16 months...
Working for us.
That's right. which means Stone's gotta be dirty. Looks like he hired Strickland to kill Cantor.
Greer considers. At the FBI office, an agent finishes a call.
Hey, Tom, thought you were on leave.
Well, yeah, I am. Actually, I'm just suspended pending further investigation, but I'll just clear my desk out.
You should be home, recuperating, okay? Not walking around here in the flesh.
I was home, then I came here to clean out my desk, and, you know, before the medication kicks in, hopefully I can find a box and... Oh! Victor Welch wanted me to say hello.
I'm sorry?
Victor Welch, BSI, the good-looking kid. Very excited you're coming over there. Finally moving into the private sector. You must be excited.
Why don't you come in my office? You're not looking too sharp.
I got a minute, you know. But it's a good move for you. It's a really good group over there. Smart, talented, great legal department. Great working environment. And you gotta be happy with those first-year stock options, huh?
What are you talking about?
Miles Strickland, the guy I was chasing.
The guy you hired to kill Cantor.
Tom, you got it all wrong.
You gave him the weapon. BSI makes them. They give one to you, you give it to Strickland so he can go out and kill Cantor. The only problem is he killed his son by mistake.
Something is wrong with you.
Why are you doing this? Money? Is that what it is?
You need help.
Stone dials a number. Greer drives the knife into the back of Stone's head, and his eyes go blank and turn red. With a blade, Greer flips back a piece of skin on the back of the surrogate's neck, revealing an electronic circuit. He pulls out the microchip, then types Stone's name into the FBI login box on his computer. By holding the chip against the back of the surrogate's inert head, the computer scans his identity, allowing Greer access. Quickly slotting a USB into the computer, he starts to download all of Stone's files. He emerges from Stone's office and slips past the young agent who picks up his phone.
This is Stone. That son of a bitch, Greer, disabled my unit. Stop it!
Peters is waiting for Greer in the underground car park.
Go, go!
They drive out of the multi-story car park out into the city street. In the car, Greer flips through the files, showing stills of Cantor and the Prophet.
Jesus. No wonder VSI wants Cantor dead. He's in bed with the Prophet. He's funding the anti-surrogacy movement. He's given them millions.
Crazy bastard invents surrogates and does everything he can to destroy them.
It doesn't connect Stone to the murder. We need to link him to the weapon. He needed codes to use it. I want you to look for access codes. We get the codes, we nail Stone.
Greer scrolls through more files, pulling up a diagram of the weapon.
Good job, Agent Greer. Thank you. This is Agent Peters. I found Greer. He's been in an accident at Market and Hanover.
A car crashes into them. Agent Peters, unhurt, pulls the USB from Greer's laptop and gets out of the car. Opening the back door, she grabs the aluminium case and strides away, leaving the car keys in the ignition. Greer, shaken, painfully slides into the driver's seat. He maneuvers the battered car away from the other car and goes off in pursuit. Peters, looking over her shoulder, sees him and clambers up the side of a building. Greer mounts the pavement, crashing through everything in his path. As he turns the car, Peters jumps back down to street level. Seeing him come at her, she hurls an uprooted parking meter. Undeterred by the hole in the windscreen, Greer spins round and goes after her. She sprints down a street towards an oncoming car. At the last nanosecond, she vaults over it. Landing sure-footedly and running on, Greer crashes through a street barricade, scooping a male passerby onto his bonnet, and then a female in a messy tangle of legs. They both slide off. Agent Peters, still clutching the weapon case, vaults up onto the roof of another car and rides it like a surfboard. Greer bumps the vehicle she's riding like a dodgem car. It plows into the back of a parked car and she goes flying, landing on top of Greer's car. He points his gun at the roof of the car. She avoids the bullets and leaps from the car roof to the roof of a coach going in the other direction. Greer, looking round to see her disappearing down the street, swerves to avoid an oncoming car and crashes through the display window of a clothing boutique. Black cars converge, besuited agents clutching handguns leap out.
FBI!
Get out of the car!
He's gone. Scan for an identity chip.
He doesn't have one. He's a meatbag.
There's an exit in the back.
The agents run out through the back door, ignoring the broken mannequin dolls lying beneath the shattered vehicle, Greer among them. A police barrier is placed across the street. Bystanders watch with polite curiosity. Greer emerges from the rear entrance to the shop onto a deserted back alley and hurries out onto a main street, where he gets into an unlocked parked car. He drives off.
Where are you going?
Hey!
He speeds down the street and makes a call.
Bobby, it's Greer. I need a remote shutdown.
Agent Peters has been hijacked. You've got a disconnector.
Bobby's handcuffed.
Bobby. Hello, Bobby.
Peters. Have you gone insane? Why don't you put the gun down?
Huh? What are you trying to prove? She's tapping into
the entire Surrey network.
Agent Peters' surrogate hijacker knocks Bobby unconscious. In her salon, Maggie's mobile phone vibrates, but she doesn't notice.
Maggie, get offline right away. As soon as you get this message, something's going to happen to the surrogate.
Stone's reactivated surrogate.
She'll only speak to you, sir.
Why don't you just move in and take her down, huh?
She has a human hostage.
Oh, that slob Saunders.
The Stone surrogate touches the back of his head. He enters the vast surveillance chamber.
Peters! Peters, it's me, Andy Stone.
That's far enough, Stone. I know who hired you to kill me. I hope my old partners at VSI paid you well. Did you feel even a second of remorse when you found out you'd murdered an innocent boy?
Kent. I don't believe it. Okay. How about you tell me something, Doctor? Huh?
What did you expect VSI to do? Just stand by while you tore down everything they built? You left us no choice but to take you out. You created this technology, you changed the world, and now you want to destroy it? So what? So you can take us backwards? So we can all live like dreads?
Kanta's surrogate looks at sweaty, gagged Bobby.
So we can live like human beings.
Really, Doctor? You should learn how to live with your regrets. Now give me the gun.
Kanta's surrogate lowers the handgun and reaches down in front of her. She zaps Stone with the overload device. He slumps down, hammered by the weapon's sizzling waves of electricity. His eyes fizz and smolder as he stiffens. Kanta's surrogate nods her head.
That's for my son.
Connection failure flashes up. On his stem chair, the real Stone, a bearded black man, lies in a pool of blood. Greer pulls up outside Kanta's mansion.
I need to see your boss. I need to see Dr. Kanter right away.
Oh, good. Listen to me.
I gotta see your boss, Dr. Kanter.
Armando seizes Greer's arm and starts to pull him towards the floor. Greer grabs Armando's gun from inside his jacket. Armando is disabled.
Device connected.
Kanto's surrogate connects up the weapon. Bobby watches helplessly. Police officers run into the mansion.
Over here, officer. This way.
The receptionist lets them through. In the control room, Kanta's surrogate keys in data. Greer bursts into Kanta's opulent apartment. He glances behind him at the oncoming police officers.
Warning, commencing upload.
In the control room, Kanta, in his Jennifer Peters guise, proceeds with focused concentration. Greer comes through a dark oak screen. He spots a strip of light at the base of a wall of oak paneling. Crouching down, he finds a join in the wood and pulls open a secret door which he creeps through. He finds himself in Cantor's unlit private kitchen, where a pot is bubbling on a hob. On one wall, he finds Cantor's besuited, floppy-haired boy surrogate in his blue-lit charger cubicle. He turns a corner and finds another entire wall of surrogate cubicles, separated by a strip of heavy Victorian-style wallpaper. One of them is the brown-haired surrogate who shot the real agent, Jennifer Peters. There are two surrogates for the dreadlocked prophet in his long, colourful robes. Greer comes into a spacious, arched and canopied open-plan chamber with a bank of monitors in the centre. In the middle monitor, gagged Bobby is desperately trying to call for help. His image disappears and he's replaced by the message standby mode. Greer moves slowly around the room, taking in all the alcoves, the pictures, a narrow backlit staircase, the ornaments in glass cases.
Hello, Tom.
He spins round and sees grey-haired Dr. Cantor sitting on his stem chair.
Nice to finally meet you. In the flesh.
Cantor's pretty hijacked surrogate stands like a statue in the control room. Bobby sees that she's been switched off.
No. Lie on the floor, face down.
It's a little different when you have to kill somebody with your own hands. When you have to squeeze a trigger, you don't have a machine to do your dirty work.
Cantor fires a warning shot.
Feel that? The accelerated pulse, the heightened awareness, savoring each breath as if it were your last. That's what you've been missing. That's what everybody's been missing.
So you killed millions of people?
I changed the course of human history when I invented surrogates. Now I'm going to change it back.
You can't change what's been done. You and I know that better than most people.
My son's death will not have been in vain. Not if it heals mankind.
Heals mankind? That's what you want to do? You want to kill everyone? And that's going to heal mankind?
They're already dead. They died the minute they plugged into those machines.
This is not the solution.
That's the way it
is. That's not the way it is.
I had a vision. I was going to empower the powerless, to enable others like me to walk, to feel, to live a normal life.
Listen to me! They're going to call you a murderer! That's what you're doing!
Surrogacy is a perversion. It's an addiction. And you have to kill the addict to kill the addiction.
Upload complete.
You're too late. What I've done can't be stopped. Now you're going to be a witness to the rebirth of humanity. That's my gift to you.
He pops a pill.
No! No!
And bites into it. His body slumps. Greer heaves the dead scientist onto the floor and takes his place on the stem chair, clipping on the headpiece. The surrogate comes to life.
Selecting all surrogates.
How do we make it stop?
She removes the gag from Bobby's fleshy face.
Bobby, it's Greer. Tom Greer. How do we shut this thing down?
Full database selected.
Jesus. It's trying to kill everyone.
Listen, that thing has just uploaded a virus into the system that's going to kill anyone who's using a surrogate.
It's already started. Bobby, we need to unplug everyone. Now. Think!
Sweat pouring down his face, Bobby blinks at the prime device.
Okay, move over to the terminal to the left. Type in password red 253. We can't unplug it, but maybe we can buffer the operators. Oh, God. Okay, we got 10 seconds.
The word danger flashes up.
Okay, look, there are three boxes. Type in tango in the first, x-ray in the second, 772 in the third. Hit enter. Hit enter, what happened? Shift and enter.
A message flashes up, insulating operators from network upload.
You just saved about a billion lives there. Okay, now we gotta keep the surrogates from getting fried. Please go back to the first terminal, hit the enter key.
Hit the enter key, please. Good, now press yes.
Greer's surrogate stands over another keyboard, her finger hovering above the Y key.
So that's it? Everyone's safe?
What?
All the people?
Yes, yes, of course, yes, all the operators are safe. But if you don't press abort, all the Surians are going to be destroyed.
Her finger remains stationary.
We don't have a lot of time, man. Hit yes. Hi, hello, hit yes, Greer.
A SWAT team member appears.
Greer, I'm talking to all the surrogates.
Tom Greer, sitting in the STEM chair, wearing the headpiece, swallows hard. Outside, thousands of surrogates throng the streets. His surrey stares at the yes option.
Greer, what are you doing? Greer! For God's sakes, what are you waiting for? Press the freaking button, huh?
An entire SWAT team bursts in. Greer's surrogate presses the no button. A sniper shoots her in the head. Greer whips off his headpiece. She falls to the floor like a rag doll, sparks flying from her mane of long blonde hair, followed by green ooze. Tom Greer gets to his feet. The monitors in Cantor's control room show the operation is in full transmission mode. With a look of finality, Greer steps away and leaves.
Transmit complete.
There is now no signal. One by one, the surrogate screens darken. Outside, surrogates drop like stones. A car driven by a female surrey crashes into the car in front. Vehicles collide as bodies drop to the ground. At FBI HQ, surreys are slumped at their desks or on the floor. Two passengers flop in their seats. At the beauty salon, Bridget's surrey lies on the floor, her blue eyes wide open. Maggie's surrogate, in a sleeveless blue dress, lies like a beautiful broken china doll, staring vacantly at the ceiling. An arm lying randomly nearby. Greer strides down a street towards a cluster of crashed cars, smoke billowing from one of the engines. He looks about him, at the scenes of devastation in every direction. Bodies slumped over buckled car bonnets, car radios still blaring out their varied melodies. Looking calm and composed, he sets off down the city street. A woman with long, bushy, dark hair and a blue housecoat over a pair of pajamas steps out of her brown brick house, glancing idly at a postman lying on the steps, a sheaf of letters still in his hands. Pulling her coat across her, she steps onto the pavement. Another woman in a dressing gown and slippers steps around a male and female lying on top of each other in an unseemly huddle. The street is beginning to fill up with other real people in their dressing gowns, contemplating the lifeless surreys as if they were an art exhibit. Greer comes past a knot of neighbours whispering softly to each other and lets himself into his apartment. He kicks down the door of Maggie's room. Her STEM chair is empty, and on the table next to it, he sees all her pills, one tube open on its side, with tablets spilling out onto the polished surface. He backs out of the room with a look of panic on his face. He opens the door of their son's bedroom and gulps. Maggie is standing with her back to him, gazing out of the window. He steps towards her, and she slowly turns to look at him. She has the same face as her surrey, but without makeup, and her hair uncombed. And there is a scar running down from her temple and on her forehead. He lowers his eyes as if unsure what to do. She brings her hand to his grizzled face, her fingers softly caressing his cheek. He closes his eyes and leans into her hand, and she presses her cheek against his.
trying to piece together exactly what has occurred today. There has been a total systems failure of the central surrogate grid in every major city on the eastern seaboard, possibly in the entire United States.
Describing an identical failure in those cities, this is unbelievable.
No reports of human casualties. The damage appears limited only to surrogate units.
Thus far, no statements from VSI. They have not responded to requests for information.
Paris, London, Beijing, all reporting the same thing.
So still no official word when or if surrogate services can be restored. It appears, at least for now, that we are on our own.
Blackout. Audio description by Veronica Hicks at IMS. Casting by Jane Jenkins, CSA, Janet Hirschenhorn, CSA, and Michelle Lewitt, CSA. Music by Richard Marvin. Costume designer, April Ferry. Edited by Kevin Stitt, ACE. Visual effects supervisor, Mark Stetson. Production designer, Jeff Mann. Director of photography, Oliver Wood. Executive producers, David Nixay, Elizabeth Banks. Produced by David Hoberman, Todd Lieberman. Produced by Max Handelman. Based on the graphic novel by Robert Venditti and Brett Velderly. Screenplay by John Brancato and Michael Ferris. Unit production manager, Todd Arno. First assistant director, Nilo Otero. Second assistant director, Brandon Lambden. Cast, Greer, Bruce Willis, Peters, Rada Mitchell, Maggie, Rosamund Pike, Stone, Boris Kodjo, Cantor, James Francis Ginty, Older Cantor, James Cromwell, The Prophet, Ving Rhames, Strickland, Jack Noseworthy, Bobby, Devin Rattray, Colonel Brendan, Michael Cudlitz, Armando, Jeffrey De Serrano, JJ the Blonde, Helena Mattson, Uniformed Cop, Michael Phillip, Victim, Danny Smith, Hard Hat, Brian Parrish. Landlady, Jennifer Alden, Jared Cantor, Shane Zizek, Undergrad 1, Andrew Hazelat, Undergrad 2, Justin Goodridge, Female Newscaster, Lisa Hernandez, Male Newscaster, Kirk Hawkins, Female Counsel, Meta Golding, Female Lawyer, Taylor Cole, Assistant, Rachel Sterling, Victor Welch, Jordan Belfi, Steinberg, J.L. Highsmith, Pulaski Commando, Nicholas Purcell, Captain, Max Murphy, Lopez, Victor Webster, Cop, David Klefker, Female Dread, Dorothy Brodessa, Bridget, Valerie Aslin, Hirosuke Michael O'Toole, Salesman Chad Williams, Hunk Mike Randy, Gate Guard Michael DeMello, Pedestrian Ron Murphy, Older Woman Genevieve Johnson, Miller David Connolly, Bard Bruce Serafin, Boy Cantor Cody Christian, Andre Ian Novick, Brian Todd Cahoon, Lisa Ella Thomas, Agent 1 Gabriel Olds, Agent 2 Eamon Brooks, FBI Guard Rodney Weber, Commandos DeLon Grant, Matthew Souris, Sniper Paul Schaefer, Big Woman Christian Mascot, Kid 1, Ari Mosto. Kid 2, Nathan Mosto. Receptionist, Taylor Bunce. Controller Commando, Edwin McCabe. Beautiful Woman, Anya Munzikova. Stunt Coordinator, Jerry Hewitt. Stunt Double for Mr. Willis, Stuart Wilson. Music, Goodies, written by Sean Holland, performed by Deborah Dolce. Bach Air, written by Johann Sebastian Bach, performed by Classical Masters. Election Campaign, written and performed by Jack Weldenmeyer. Phase 3, written by Alexander Roda, performed by Eurobeat Club. Hijacker, written and performed by Dean Ogden. Skin Trade, written and performed by Dean Ogden. This Game of Love, written by Rachel Lippmann, Jonathan Mosto, Jeff Paschetto, performed by Robin Camise. Beethoven's Ninth, performed by Classical Masters. I Will Not Bow, written by Benjamin Burnley, Jason Ralph, performed by Breaking Benjamin. Courtesy of Hollywood Records. American Humane monitored the animal action. No animals were harmed. The producers wish to thank Commonwealth of Massachusetts, City of Boston, Boston Police Department, City of Worcester, City of Lynn. Copyright 2009, Touchstone Pictures, all rights reserved. Distributed by Walt Disney Studios Motion Pictures. This film is rated PG-13 for intense sequences of violence, disturbing images, language, sexuality, and a drug-related scene. Mandeville Films.